Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Chapters 1 through 10 establishes Victor Frankenstein's background. And it's something that I believe we would expect. He's Swiss. He's living in Geneva. Maybe we wouldn't expect that necessarily. But what we do expect, that is, he is from a wealthy family. A wealthy, well-respected family. And this is an important point because we're not dealing with a family who's going to have their children struggle and suffer. So in many ways, one way to analyze Victor Frankenstein is the fact that he is someone who is elected to suffer. So from the place of privilege that he starts, his decision and how to go about living his life is defined by the suffering that he brings onto himself. So we have to ask ourselves one of the early questions in the novel is why is this at the root of the human experience for Victor Frankenstein? And do we apply this idea that someone in a place of privilege is more likely to seek out suffering in some sort of existential way to make sure that their life gains necessary meaning? Is there something to consider the fact that from a place of privilege, there is sometimes jealousy and envy of those who have had to struggle? I know we touched on this a little bit with the letters. But as we hear Victor Frankenstein's story, we have to think about this concept. How much suffering is necessary for someone in a position of privilege where the suffering is voluntary? How much suffering needs to take place where that seems to be enough? Is there a line? Now, part of this, we also understand, we learn a lot about Victor Frankenstein's personality, and we learn the fact that he's an isolated individual. He spends a lot of time with his sister, Elizabeth, who's adopted. And while they are extremely close, he makes one friend in Henry. Those people help socialize him, but they don't in any way, shape, or form help him fit more into civil society in a way that, you know what, I want more friends, I want more people. I'm going to go to school, and it's also not just going to be educational, but it's also going to be an opportunity for me to expand my horizon socially, maybe civically. It's interesting that his father is a public servant. You know, he's involved in the government. That's an outgoing personality most of the time. And if that's the case, we have a very introverted Victor Frankenstein. The fact that he's focused on the concept of the creation of life, and that he decides that the most important thing to do to understand life is to first understand death. And as we analyze the names he mentions of the natural scientists that are, you know, pre-modern scientists that he brings up, that the professors kind of laugh at him about at first, before Walden points out that, no, there is merit to these characters. I mean, these are philosophers. But as we think about this, and as we analyze, the names aren't as important as what they represent. They represent a way of thinking that has been disproven. However, it's important because it was these guys trying that allowed other people to learn from their mistakes and then build what we now know as modern science that would be what would be going on during Victor Frankenstein's era. But he still focuses heavily on this concept of life and death. And the death of his mother, I think, plays a role there. His sister Elizabeth gets sick. We understand that. And basically, as it was pointed out, people were worried about his mother going over the top with her treatment and care of Elizabeth. And ultimately, she sacrifices her own health to save her daughter. And the mother gets sick on her own, and she passes, giving a very long final speech, which we'll talk about in class. She says that she will die happy knowing what she's done with her family. But that trauma is real. And you have to wonder if Victor Frankenstein is connecting his focus on life and death with the potential that if he can understand how life is created, then he can in return reverse death. And I think we have to understand that's sort of at the heart of this entire text. How do people grieve? The loss of the mother. We already have a boy who's focused on this idea of what it means to live, and in return what it means to die. The mother dies, strengthens his cause. This is how he grieves. And I think we see that throughout the text, that this was something that was definitely a driver of his focus. Yes, he goes to school. Yes, he meets with two different teachers. One ultimately says, you know, what you're talking about isn't for me. The second teacher obviously supports him, guides in the right direction, sees the potential, and provides him the resources necessary for his study. And Victor Frankenstein becomes celebrated. But what he starts doing on his own, he pulls himself once again out of society. He retreats back into himself. He spends all that time focused on death, looking at things that have recently died. And he decides to create life and create a human. And there's a lot of ego here as well. A ton of ego. He wants to create something that will see him as the ultimate creator. That a lineage of these people could come and he could be almost like their god. So this is not something that is not without some celebratory ideas and methods and aspirations. And he does it. He creates life. And the description of the monster is it's a hideous beast. And he will not tell us how he did it. He says he'll explain it later. So in this first 10 chapters, he makes life, but he doesn't explain how he does it. In first sight of the monster, he freaks out. The monster reaches for him. He panics. He leaves the monster. By the time he returns to his apartment, the monster has fled. And we don't hear from the monster for another 2 years. But in that span of 2 years, Victor Frankenstein is a wreck. He suffers from basically PTSD after this incident. Henry shows up at college ready to learn, only to have to take care of his friend, delaying his own studies. Another selfish moment by Victor Frankenstein. There's letters from Elizabeth welcoming and hoping that her brother will return, because all the love and joy that is back home for him, he's not participating in. People just want to hear from him. And then the following chapter obviously jumps right in back into the fact that the youngest brother, William, has been killed. And not just killed, he's been murdered, and there's no real suspect. And the person they end up believing is the killer is Justine, who's a servant, who's basically family to the Frankensteins. What makes this very interesting is the moment he hears about this scenario, there's guilt involved. But on his way back, when he sees the monster in the distance, he knows immediately in his heart that it's the monster who murdered his brother. And by the time he reaches his family, he cannot tell them this. Now remember, he has no proof of this. So after the first 10 chapters here, we don't have any proof one way or another. Victor Frankenstein saying that just because it's an idea in his head means it's true, I think we gotta kind of pause on that. And we know that how this is going to go, starting with chapter 11, when the narration is going to switch. But I want us to keep considering this idea that on the way back, he sees the monster. The monster's still alive. It's been 2 years. His brother's dead. And now the guilt sets in. But we got to remember that part of this problem is that Victor Frankenstein has a big ego. And putting himself in the middle of his brother's murder, being the one who has the most grief, who needs to be treated, you know, the best because he's the saddest. You know, this is, or the most sad. Let's try to speak properly a little bit. So as I think about this, you got to remember what we're talking about here is this idea that Victor Frankenstein consistently is seeing himself as the center of the world, even when he's trying not to be. So even though he is sympathetic in many ways, his biggest problem, even though it's been a commitment to science, the ego of creation and creating life in this manner, the death of his brother being centered around his own guilt, his inability to express the fact to either his family and the judges that this monster exists and probably did the murder when Justine is on trial. She's convicted. She goes ahead and admits that she did it so that her soul can be cleansed before she's executed. And all of a sudden, there's now two people gone, potentially because of Victor Frankenstein's monster. At that point, Victor Frankenstein, after some time, the family moves and then he moves again to get more space. And that is when he meets up with the monster again. And the monster is completely fluent and blames Victor Frankenstein. And I think rightfully so. Victor Frankenstein created him and then left him. And now we have a conversation on that. What is owed by Victor Frankenstein to the monster? What does the monster owe Victor Frankenstein? And there's a real threat there. The monster says, if you won't hear me out, I'm going to make your family pay, everyone you know, all your friends. Which alludes to the fact that maybe he did kill William. And in return, Justine was killed as collateral damage. So I want us to think about this before we wrap up these chapters. There's so much to look at once the monster and Victor interact. In his behavior, the monster blames his behavior so far on the fact that how he's been received by society. No one's welcomed him. He's been nothing but isolated, mocked, disregarded. But the worst part of that is that this has occurred from and because of Victor Frankenstein, who spent no time with him. There was no helping him. He was created and then left to his own devices. Our next section will focus on Frankenstein hearing his monster, hearing the tale of what has gone on the last 2 years. Who's truly the sympathetic character here is in question. Nature versus nurture will be in question. The concept of the ego of Victor Frankenstein will be in question. What motivates him will be in question. Amongst other things, what exactly did Victor Frankenstein create? What is the monster? We'll pick this up next week with chapters 11 through 16.